right. It's a couple minutes after 10 o'clock. You're tuned to WPKN in at 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut. That means, I don't know what it means. We're still here. I can't believe that. It's 2011. We're still here. Happy New Year to everyone. Happy New Year to you, Ken.
Happy New Year, Dave.
Happy New Year to you, Gus.
You as well, Dave.
And I know they were looking over their shoulder tonight when they came in, so something must be cooking on the In Context, which is the program which airs on the first of the month here at 10 o'clock on Sunday night.
Right.
Ken, welcome to the program.
Good
again.
Evening. Thank you, Dave. Good evening, listeners. My name's Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with my sidekick, Gus Candavero, and our show is In Context.
So. Should change his name to Horse.
Our website's incontextreport.com, where you can also reach us and see our blog postings. We'd like to cover a few stories tonight, but the main feature of the show is we'd like to hear your comments, too, on the recent news stories. So we'll be giving out our call-in phone number shortly. But first, Gus and I are going to take a look at some recent news that you might have or might not have heard about, and maybe we'll have a perspective on it that you didn't have before. Gus, what do you have?
Well, to start it off, I brought in a recent poll. I found this in the Huffington Post, and this was posted just yesterday. And the title is 63% of Americans oppose war in Afghanistan. And the headline reads, opposition to the war in Afghanistan is at an all-time high, with 63% of the public now opposed to U.S. involvement there, according to a new CNN Opinion Research Corporation survey. Just 35% of survey respondents say they still support U.S. involvement. I mean, you know, what more do you need? Every month, the population wakes up just a little bit more, and the support drops a little bit more. And, you know, it's going to be pretty soon before we're going to start seeing some real resistance going on.
It just hasn't had the population's lack of interest in this war. Now, the opposition to the war just doesn't seem to have any effect on President Obama. I think that a lot of people who voted for him thought they were voting for peace. They thought they were voting for an end of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it didn't happen.
And this links right into the next headline I have, which is from our buddy Rick Rozoff at Stop NATO. And the headline is, Washington uses arms sales to achieve global supremacy. And the headline is reads, the United States accounts for 43% of world military spending and 30% of global arms exports. So, you know, a lot of Americans, liberals, voted for Obama thinking that he's going to end the wars, and he's going to bring a level-headed approach to the international conversation. But, you know, in his 2009 Nobel Prize address, President Barack Obama unabashedly celebrated his nation as the world's sole military superpower, writes Rick Rozoff, and his actions in the interim have been dedicated to confirming, prolonging, and magnifying that status. The U.S. is, quote-unquote, is currently the world's biggest weapons supplier, holding 30% of the market. The Obama administration has begun modifying export control regulations in hopes of enlarging the U.S. market share. Obama first advocated the streamlining of arms sales controls in August 2009 and reiterated the demand in his State of the Union address in January 27th as an element toward doubling exports by 2015.
Now, Rick Rozoff, who's an analyst with globalresearch.ca, an excellent think tank. We've had him on WPKN a couple of times, and he's been carefully documenting this global drive towards hegemony, which the U.S. has developed in partnership with NATO. And basically, it involves the encirclement of Russia, China, and Iran. And it's involved us in something like over 40 military partnerships. NATO is sort of the paradigm for it. It's been expanded. It's being duplicated in Southeast Asia.
Right.
We're erecting missile shields in Europe and in Asia. We're conducting military exercises off the coast of China. So it's pretty clear what's going on. And it follows from Zbigniew Brzezinski's famous book, I think it was called The Great Chess Game, about
the Grand Chessboard.
The Grand Chessboard, about the U.S. global strategy, what it should be. And basically, it should be about capturing control of Eurasia. That's the prize. The country that can get control of Eurasia is really going to be will dominate the world. And that's what we're out to do.
And it's just a big game to them. And it has nothing to do with what flag you grew up under. You know, Brzezinski himself is not even an American. He's Polish. And
it's sort of realpolitik. And I think these
wherever
guys,
you are, that's where you are, and that's what you're loyal to at the moment.
These guys are leading us. They're leading us to disaster, I think. And we're going down the same road that the British went down, that the Spanish and the French went down, has been very well documented by Professor Paul Kennedy at Yale in his book, The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers.
Yep.
They all do the same thing. There's nothing original here.
So you're not optimistic.
Well, what's going to stop it? You know, we sit here and we criticize the war. We present our listeners with information that we think will help arm them to be better citizens. But what do you see stopping the war? I don't see a great population move. I don't see the political determination.
Well, I mean,
this
poll, I think, goes a long way to explain, you know, it takes very incremental movements for the American populace to actually revolt in some way where they can make a difference. And that would be to boycott companies that are major arms exporters,
right?
You know, companies like GE and a few others, and refuse to serve. You know,
the leaders have been very clever that they, not clever, but they've been very pragmatic in that they've gotten rid of the draft and they're relying on a quote volunteer army to fight the war, so they don't have the unrest amongst the youth, the unrest on college campus you had during Vietnam. And remember, Vietnam War was tremendously criticized, but despite all those protests, I think it was really the decline in the economy in 1968, the threat of inflation that got the middle class really to push them to say the war had to end.
And on top of that, you've got the terrible care for the veterans. You know, a lot of them don't even get all of their disability covered. You know, if you have a leg blown off or something like that, a lot of times they'll only cover 50% of your injury. You know, your quality of life has been diminished, but they tell you, you know, well, you sacrificed for your country, we salute you, now
keep
be gone.
Keep sacrificing.
Get out of here now. And recently there was a march on the Washington with, I think it was like 30,000 veterans. I forget the number. Actually, I don't even want to say a number because I don't remember exactly what it was. And the only news outlet that covered it was RT, Russia Today.
Yeah, unfortunately, isn't that a pretty sorry commentary that some of the best reporting now is coming from Russian TV?
It's coming from outside the country.
Wouldn't say Russian.
Online.
RT is a pretty good.
RT, one of the guests we've had on, William Engdahl, a couple of times on PKN, who's probably the most brilliant contemporary historian. I think he wrote a book called what it's called, A Full Spectrum Dominance, his most recent one. He's written a very good expose about the influence of the oil companies in promoting war. And the only time I've seen him on TV is on Russian TV.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that says a lot about the medium of TV.
Yeah, these guys can't get
on. Has he been on Oprah?
speaking of TV, guys, we've covered the 9/11 Truth Movement in great detail.
Yep.
And today, to my surprise, there was a documentary run on BBC World, Channel 104, for people who get that channel on cable. And it wasn't very, I don't think it was recent, but I was shocked to see extended excerpts of interviews.
It was part of the year's best program. So it was looking back and playing the best programs.
Because there was a retrospective, and it had a long interview with Gates.
Richard Gage,
I'm sorry, the head of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Right.
And Stephen Jones, who we interviewed and we've broadcast that interview a couple of times in WPKN,
right,
who's a physicist who's probably the most important original research in proving that the World Trade Center was brought down in a controlled demolition.
Right.
They were both interviewed on that show, which was encouraging, I thought.
That's right, yeah. And it's what's really interesting to me is that Stephen Jones has done some really incredible groundbreaking research in that. But it's almost like if the mainstream news doesn't cover it, it didn't happen and it's not important. So people need mainstream news to tell them something is important. And I always say this to people. If the average person could be out on the street and see something groundbreaking happen in front of them, but if they don't go home and see it on NBC later on, they don't think anything happened.
That's absolutely true. You have to hear something.
Well, again, that says something about the medium.
Sure. If you don't hear it from an accredited source, you don't believe it, the average person. So the process
even
of
accreditation. Even if you see it with your own eyes.
It's exactly. Well, I think a good example was when that TWA flight was blown up over Long Island Sound. It was TWA, right?
I think so.
And hundreds of witnesses said to the police, I saw the missile hit the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you can see these reports on the Internet. Someone put them online. You can see the handwritten notes from the police. note after note, saw the missile hit the plane, right? And yet the
it wasn't at that point. I mean, I was listening to that, and my recollection is they saw lights in the sky, they saw a fireball, they saw things moving.
I read the notes, Dave. Yeah. It said saw the missile hit the plane. Okay, and the government went through this charade of months and months and millions of dollars spent putting back all the pieces of the plane back together, at which point they came to the conclusion they just couldn't figure it out. The plane fell apart for no apparent reason. And one of the people in doing the research and the investigation found rocket propellant on the fabric of one of the seats. Mm-hmm. And I heard this interview on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now. The person said, I went and took it to a TV producer. She was going to run it on one of the networks. It's a big story. It proved that the missile hit the plane.
Or at least opens the gate for some more investigation.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it was rocket propellant, and what apparently happened is a rocket hit the plane. And so the guy comes back and said,
it could have been a terrorist. Why not we find it out?
And then the guy came back, and the producer comes back and says, I'm sorry, we can't do this piece. I said, I got it from the higher-ups. We just are not going to do this piece. And then later on, the report came out from the French Secret Service that, in fact, a missile had gone off from an American ship in Long Island Sound while conducting an exercise, and that's what hit the plane.
Right.
And yet now they convinced everybody that this what people actually saw didn't happen.
Spontaneous demolition.
Planes just fall out of
the
sky.
The official word is it was static electricity in the gas tank.
That's right.
It's taken down other aircraft.
That's right. And the official explanation now from NIST is that fire brought down World Trade Center Building Number 7. Absolutely.
I mean,
ludicrous.
Well, it could have been spark from whatever. But why can't we follow up with some of the other leads?
Right. I don't watch any television, so I can't. I only watch public access.
Okay.
But, I mean, I think your point is very accurate. I think the people would believe it's snowing in July if the right sources say it's snowing in July.
Yeah.
And, that's why we're here on listener-sponsored radio, because we can tell you that it's not snowing in July.
Do you remember that bizarre, it happened around the same week that Obama was in Europe for the Nobel Peace Prize reception, and there was that that really bizarre spinning blue ray beam in the sky. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay, that was a major story, and no one covered that. There was a very bizarre whirl pattern in the sky at night, and it was bright blue.
Where was it spun?
It was a vortex.
Where was it seen?
It was over Norway.
Okay.
All right, and it happened, I think it was maybe 11:30 at night.
Aurora Borealis?
No. It was a circle by itself with nothing else around it. Not on the horizon, up in the sky, if you were doing the clock.
Dick Cheney?
So there was no explanation.
Like 10 o'clock high in the sky. So,
right.
So pretty, maybe 9 o'clock, something like that. And, it's a vortex pattern. It spun in place for about 20 to 30 seconds and then disappeared. And there's multiple videos of this. You can find it on YouTube.
Well,
it's readily available.
Out.
And conveniently, we've talked about HARP and other
weather manipulation,
beam ray, manipulations to.
You mean microwaving the
atmosphere? And Norway has one. Norway has one.
Is that right?
All right. So why no one will? What they said was that it was a Russian missile test.
I see. Well, who could challenge that, right?
I mean, and then Russia said, no, we didn't launch a missile. And America said, yes, you did.
So it might have been one of these instruments like HARP.
Something like that, yeah. But the news said, oh, look at this weird thing. And they cover it like one of those, here's a cat playing the piano type of piece. Wow, this is funny. No, that's not funny. That's totally crazy.
Well, that brings to mind the apparent missile that was spotted off the coast of California a couple of weeks ago. And it was all over CNN for the day. And a local news crew had filmed this thing, and it certainly looked like a missile. Mm-hmm. And the CNN anchors were saying, well, whose missile was it? Whose missile was it? The next day, our government announced that it wasn't really a missile. It was the trail of some airplane. And, I mean, it looked like a missile. And so people accepted that. But then I saw Wayne Madsen had done some independent investigation on it. And he said his sources inside the government said it was a Chinese missile. Mm-hmm. They identified the submarine, the type of submarine, mm-hmm. and the origin of the submarine. And it was clearly sent up there to say, we can get within 50 miles of Los Angeles and shoot off a missile.
Is this the one that the government said that it was actually the Coast Guard of Virginia or something doing a test?
Maybe that was one of their explanations.
Off the coast of California.
Now, yeah, and it turned out that they actually were in the area for training exercises.
I see.
But I don't think they launched any missiles. You know, they certainly did. Actually, no. The answer is no, they didn't launch any missiles for tests. Why the Coast Guard doesn't have missiles.
So you're not satisfied that it was just the exhaust of an aircraft?
Well, if it's the Chinese, which seems not... Well, I mean, we were conducting military exercises shortly before that in areas near China. So it seems not unlikely that
they were trying to prove a point.
They don't care if the American people are lied to by the government.
No, the government knows.
As long as the people in charge of the Pentagon know it was a Chinese missile, they've made their point.
People would lose their minds, you know, if they had any idea that they were not totally safe. Americans have the idea that we can't be touched.
Well, what do you think out there, folks? Give us a ring. We're at 203-336-9756. Name of the program is In Context. And when you want to talk about the war, you want to talk about the economy, the job situation, anything, we would be very happy to hear from you. It doesn't matter what your perspective is, a liberal, conservative, right or left. We'd like to hear from you at 203-336-9756. And I wonder, we're talking about, you know, the media and obviously the corporate control of the media. What effect is the status quo is being wreaked upon the status quo by WikiLeaks, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good topic.
riding on the coattails of what I was just mentioning about how most Americans are against the war and how Washington is helping to boost arms sales. You know, we have this global hegemony goal here, and we use all of our power for empire, and we use all of our industrial power to produce more weapons for more global conflict. And one of the things that came out of Julian Assange lately, he was being interviewed on Al Jazeera Arabic channel, and he says that he has information that ties many high-level Arabic officials to the CIA, and that if his life is threatened or he's detained for an extended period of time, he has 2,000 websites around the world that are ready to release these documents to show that basically these officials are acting as spies on behalf of the CIA. And so, you know, we're talking about countries being, using a lot of their economic resources to purchase arms and weapons of destruction from our country. You know, well, we've got informants in all of the governments around the world. You know, we're using our influence to make sure that these wars never stop.
And yet, one of the ironies is the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables that were released most recently. And we talk about WikiLeaks, we're directly talking about three batches of documents. In July, there were Afghan war documents. In October, they released Iraq war documents. And then November 28th, most recent, was diplomatic cables. In addition, WikiLeaks put out the collateral murder videos of the U.S. helicopter gunship killing civilians, including two Reuters reporters. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about all these things. One of the things that was exposed is the concern, actually the knowledge in our State Department, that the greatest amount of financing for terrorist groups, for Al-Qaeda, is coming from Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. Qatar, Kuwait, our supposed allies.
Yeah.
And they're not doing anything about it. They're funding all sorts of private money. It's freely going into groups that are supposedly our enemy, killing Americans at Afghanistan and around
the
world.
And it's an incredibly messy situation. We have informants in those governments. We use our pressure to get them to do what we want. We have paper trails that prove that a lot of our supposed terrorist threats are coming from the funding, the money that we give to Saudi Arabia, that then in turn gets laundered and sent to the terrorist groups to help fund them and get them established and give them the arms and the means and the ability to come over to threaten us. So in other words, we're creating our own threat.
That's right. That's right. Now, obviously, Hillary Clinton knows about it. Her name's all over these cables, mm-hmm. but they don't tell them, the Americans. I guess we have no right to know. And when the information comes out, who are the bad guys? The State Department? No, the bad guys are Julian Assange and his staff.
The people who leak this stuff, they're terrorists.
That's right.
They're informational terrorists.
One of the disclosures in the diplomatic cables also has to do with Obama's attitude towards torture. I think a lot of people thought, well, he'll come and he'll end torture. You tell people, well, he didn't end torture. In fact, as soon as he got in, At the time he came into office, Spain had begun an independent investigations of U.S. torture and were investigating specifically the Bush lawyers who had, including Alberto Gonzalez, who had, were the architects of our torture policy. So what did Obama do? In the 3 months into his presidency, he sent over a senator to Spain to put pressure on the Spanish government to suppress the investigation. And so much for change you can believe in.
All right. Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that.
Another item relating to the war on terror is that World Socialist website has reported that Obama administration is preparing an executive order to authorize the indefinite detentions of the prisoners in Guantanamo, a prison he was supposedly going to shut down. And the press secretary, this is at Politico.com, Obama's press secretary said, called it regrettable. We have to hold people indefinitely without trial.
Yeah,
he calls
it,
quote, regrettable, unquote.
That's so, just too bad. Yeah.
So this is what we've come to. So
Ken,
I.
You know, Ken, you're making me looking forward to when we get Bush back in the White House.
That's right. Well, I tell you, I'm the older I get, the more Eisenhower looks good. Because lately I've been watching and rewatching his farewell speech where he talks about beware of the dangers of the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. And boy, I'm getting nostalgic for Ike.
Well, that was an anomaly because they were in charge long before Eisenhower.
And they were in charge during his administration. But I think inside, Eisenhower would like to have ended the Cold War. He didn't like the approach.
Well, he was an innocent.
And so at the end, he said, I'll take his parting shot. And he really laid it on the line. He said there are concentrations of power in the military, in the armaments industry that is threatening to take over our government.
But I know, it's no matter how obvious you are, unless you actually name somebody, people are so dense that they just don't get it. Like, Eisenhower was pretty clear. You know, he named things and, you know, Kennedy was pretty clear and he named people and specific threats. But unless you hear a name, people are so dense that they're just sitting there and be like, wow, I wonder who he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And after all, the media, the arms makers have the media on their side, basically.
They own them.
They own the media. It's just a handful of companies. It's something that Paul Wellstone,
GE owns NBC,
was very concerned about, the senator from Minnesota who died in, a suspicious plane crash. Mm-hmm. That he was, it's like four or five companies control the media. They're all in bed with each other, interlocking ownerships. So they're going to be on board with their advertisers and with the big companies, the big banks. And so even if the president takes a stand against them, he's just one guy.
Right. No, I mean, and do you really think that these big networks who rely on advertising money in order to produce the product, which is the news is a product, they have to tailor it so that it doesn't offend their sponsors? You know, just like a shock jock on a DJ on a radio station or something like that. You know, they're going to lose their sponsors if they're too edgy, because the sponsor has a group of people that they want to advertise to,
right,
and they don't want to offend, you know, whatever it is, women in their 30s to 45.
That's
or something,
right,
like that, mothers or
that's
something,
right,
you know, whatever. So they're going to say that we need you to tailor your material so that it's less offensive to this group of people, otherwise you're going to pearl our advertising. So if you have a show, you know, like 2020 or Dateline or something like that, they're not going to hit a target that is going to offend their sponsor.
That's right.
So many companies are tied into the military industrial complex, defense contractors and such.
Well, it's just not TV. It's magazines,
everything,
newspapers. If you read, I used to love Popular Science when I was a kid, and then I started to notice that kind of the articles were things I've already seen, so I stopped reading it. If you read Popular Science Today, every article has roots in a DARPA.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I know. I used to subscribe to it a few years ago, and I noticed there were press releases coming out of DARPA and places,
right,
the government defense
new
agencies.
New robots, new this, new that.
They weren't doing any research. They were just acting as an outlet for the Defense Department.
Right. They're telling you that it's a great thing. They're not even telling you that, well, this could be incredibly dangerous or intrusive to your privacy or something like that. You know, like, they're not going to talk about the little robot mosquitoes that DARPA has with microphones and cameras.
Right,
they can fly
right
into your house and just land on your wall.
But the tie to media, to government,
yes,
you know, it was just an outlet.
It's so obvious in that case, and that was really documented way back in the 70s by Bernstein, the famous Watergate investigator, and his famous article on the CIA plants in the major media. It was printed in Rolling Stone magazine. Was the only place that could was published. It was a really tremendous article, and they documented that hundreds of people are inside major media. In fact, just about every major media outlet has people inside it who are mainly not directly employed by the CIA, but they act as CIA assets, so that the CIA director can boast that anytime they want to plan a story anywhere, they can get it done.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And I thought it was interesting that Bernstein's career didn't really take off after that, whereas his buddy Woodward, who was a former national security person himself, has prospered.
Mm-hmm. He knew where to put his toes.
He knew which side of the bread the butter would go on. Here's an interesting article the Rock Creek Free Press, which we found some. It's a Washington independent newspaper. The FBI has paid $177,000 to an ex-convict named Craig Montelli to infiltrate Muslim communities and entrap Muslims on terrorism charges. And the guy was so outrageous that after some of his talks of violent jihad, members of his fellow mosque members filed a restraining order against him. That's right. So this is how some of these terrorist cases are being started through these kind of these agents of the FBI who come in and try to
only the finest.
So now, because he's been sued. He's revealing the FBI secret methods and charging that his FBI handlers trained him to entrap Muslims.
He's going to write a book with Valerie Plame.
Well, he got $177,000 from the FBI. So when you read about these, FBI.
He's paid handsomely to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's something that they really value.
I would do that.
That's important work.
I would do that for $177,000. Where do you sign up? Where can I sign up?
I'm sure they have a website that you can go to. And just
I'm fairly honest. I wouldn't be qualified.
You're kind of loose cannon.
Yeah, I was looking at WikiLeaks is it's I don't know if you will look really you talk about it, but do you look at it?
What do you mean?
WikiLeaks.
Have I looked at it?
I don't look. That's a good question. Most of us don't look at the original cables. We look at the way they've been presented by the New York Times and Der Spiegel and the other papers.
This past one, I haven't looked at the originals. I looked at the one before that.
You did,
but I mean, the one before that was 170,000 documents.
Well, that's why you have to rely on the people who are going through them.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at a few of them that were pertinent to something that I was interested in, but no, I did not look
at
all.
It's very hard to find anything because it's not really cataloged very well. You can download it.
Yeah,
but
it's just a bunch of text files.
WikiLeaks, it's interesting that despite the attempts to have it removed, restrained, it persists.
So
it goes off, it comes back up. WikiLeaks, it was WikiLeaks.org, was it?
It's been housed in like 12 different countries now. They keep getting shut down.
But the name,
yeah,
it was WikiLeaks.org. Now it's WikiLeaks.info.
Okay.
So if I go there, I will be able to look at the original cables and other documents?
Yes, you can. Yep. Yep.
WikiLeaks.info.
At this moment, they'll probably knock that off. You know what I'm saying? They talk about it being a hacker attack, but it's not necessarily a hacker attack, do you think?
Well, I mean,
No, it's not. It's the U.S. government attacking.
U.S. government taking him down, yeah. Well, who do you think is going to win?
Well, the government has hired hackers for years now. It's something that they go out, they recruit the best hackers out there, and they pay them to do attacks. And you know, they say it's supposedly to try to increase our security so that we can protect ourselves against Chinese hackers or Indian hackers or Russian hackers or whatever. But you know, they're doing dirty deeds for.
I can imagine
the
best hackers are not civil servants, they're not career civil servants. They're guys who are independents who maybe get into trouble, and the government comes up to them.
That's what it is. They look for
people. You can go to jail. You can work for us.
That's what it is. They look for people who are a little bit checkered, and they say, you know, they offer them an out, and they say, you know, you can earn a lot of money working for us, or you can go to jail. Take your pick.
Well, right. The only hackers I know, the only real hackers I know, are the ones that can turn all the computer screens blue at Greenwich High School.
That's quite a feat. We all know how protected those are.
Meanwhile, if I can take a quick look at the domestic economy, we're talking about foreign affairs. And by the way, we are 203 336-9756. So please give us a call. In context on any subject you'd like to talk about, 203-336.
Maybe add some optimism to the conversation here.
9756. Oh, I'm definitely going to add. I want to move up, Pete. I'm going to talk about the economy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave.
Just put a smile on my face.
So why aren't we not having a revival in the economy? Apparently, all but 4% of the top 500 U.S. corporations had profits this year. So why isn't the economy? Why aren't jobs coming back? Well, according to
You said all but four of the
all
top
but four,
500.
496 had profits this year. Well, Associated Press reported that of the 2.4 million jobs created last year, the majority of the 1.4 million were created by U.S. companies overseas.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So most of the jobs being created by these profitable U.S. companies are in foreign countries.
Now, we know how we love to manipulate numbers. Are we counting those towards the job creation?
Oh, imagine. The 1 million in the foreign countries. Well, they are created jobs, not for Americans.
Ken, I don't want to delay the pain any longer, but you do have a phone call.
Oh,
let's
sure.
Bring it up.
Hey, good evening, caller. On your In Context on WPKN.
Hey, how are you?
Good evening.
Good to hear from you.
Great show. I'm a longtime listener of the station.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if you fellas remember Bob Oddie. He was the Funkmeister.
Not personally, no. But I'm sure someone listening does.
Yeah, he was an overnight DJ at your station years back. He moved out to Albuquerque. He's got a show with the university out there. But anyway.
Great.
I heard that he was a CIA plant here.
Actually, he's on the red list, fellas. He's so anti-everything now. He's definitely on the red list. He's been arrested so many times for protesting that, it's just amazing that he hasn't been kept inside.
Sounds like a real WPKNer. What have you got for us tonight?
Well, I'm wondering, how far are we allowed to go on your program?
We won't limit you. Just keep it clean.
Yeah, as long as it's not one of the forbidden dirty words.
Yeah.
I don't use vulgar language myself, but I mean, we stick our necks out there. You're sticking your necks out there. There could be repercussions, so I'm serious. There's some deep stuff. We all know there's more deep stuff than what any normal American is aware to admit about.
Well, my personal motto is live on your feet or die on your knees, so I'm not going to censor anything that people want to say.
Sure, listener, we'd be pleased to hear whatever you have to say.
Okay, well, at this moment, I'd like to reserve that for another time. I will call in again. I am busy about doing some other things, but what time does your program begin?
We're on at 10 o'clock on the first Sunday of the month, and we're also on 6:30 on the first Wednesday of the month. So we're going to be on again, actually, in 3 days at 6:30.
Great.
But we're going to be talking the economy specifically on that show because we have a guest.
Yeah, we have a guest, and we're going to be focusing on banking and money and the need to create a public banking system.
But feel free to write us at on the blog. We have comments, and you can email us there, incontextreport.com.
Yeah.
So...
And well, interesting. You know, as if money is even real. So, you know,
well, that's right. Money's a computer entry.
That's all it is.
That's it.
That's all it is.
And that's what we're going to talk about. So we're going to
credited and debited. That's all it is.
Our guest is going to be Ellen Brown. We're going to be talking about the illusion of the Federal Reserve and debt-backed money. So if you have a question, and she's a really great resource for information.
Okay.
So please call in.
Are you fellas familiar with The Creature from Jekyll Island?
Absolutely.
Yes, actually, we did a show with G. Ed Griffin. We did a show with them.
We interviewed G. Edward Griffin
just a month ago. We did a show with him on the chemtrails. Are you familiar with them? That chemtrail?
He's
most famous for the book you mentioned on the Federal Reserve, The Creature from Jekyll Island, but he just did a movie called What in the World Are They Spraying? And it's an investigation of the phenomena of chemtrails, where they have these apparently airplanes are crisscrossing the United States dumping chemicals.
Oh, yes.
We don't know what they are.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. For years, this has been well known on the Internet. Yes.
Yes.
It's all controlled, people. It's all about controlling.
Well,
absolutely.
The film is
you gotta
what?
Be slave to somebody.
The film is What in the World Are They Spraying? So I recommend you go out there and check it out.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
I will call in again. My name's Gary, and I will definitely call in again, fellas. Thanks for a
great
show.
Gary.
Be safe,
thanks, Gary.
All right.
Hey, Ken, I want to go back a minute to before you jump into the next topic, really quick.
Oh, do we have another call, Dave?
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Dramatic pause there. Okay. Hal Turner. I've followed his case for a little bit, but he was a radio host and a blogger, and he was a friend of of Sean Hannity. He was a frequent caller, and then finally I think he did his own show. It was like a late night thing. But he was he's sort of this, like, you know, supremacist, you know, the black people are the cause of a lot of the problems, and, you know, we need to go out and we need to basically just, like, injure people. And he was really big against 9/11 truthers. They need to be shot. They need to be killed because they're dangerous to our country. They're traitors. And, you know, he's really into, like, provocateuring and getting violence to be taken to happen. And recently he was arrested on multiple counts. I forget exactly what they were. It was a year ago or so, and in the trial it came out that he was a top level FBI informant, and he a lot of the case was told to just stop because it was national security. So they said stop, you can't go any further. National security. He is an FBI informant. Top level.
So we wonder how often this is happening when you hear, like, the Ku Klux Klan has a march someplace. Is that some kind of FBI provocateur?
You never know. I mean, nine out of the 10 people attending probably are just useful idiots who think, yeah, you know, black people, they're sucking off the system. You know, they're bringing us down.
Another racist on parole and on the payroll.
Exactly.
And there's a bigger purpose to this, which is stir the pot, divide and conquer. Keep people focused on fighting each other, especially the black and the white, because you don't want the working people to get together. That's the worst nightmare.
No, they have more in common than they have apart. And people, you need to come together. You need to realize what your similarities are more powerful than your differences.
Exactly. And that's gets to the overwhelming struggle of this country is not left-right. That's a false opposition that's been set up by the media. It's between the ordinary people versus the corporate oligarchy that's running our government for their own benefit.
Right. You want to jump into the last article? I think we're probably going to be running out of time shortly.
Well, one interesting, this is a switch over to the healthcare area, is something called Codex Alimentarius.
Yep.
In Britain, it's a ban on herbal medicine that's been put through in Europe at the behest of drug companies to protect their profits, to prevent people from getting access to herbs.
And this is a UN document. The Codex Alimentarius is pushed by the UN. They want to get it implemented worldwide.
Well, it's in force in Europe, and there's an article 2 days ago in The Independent, a great newspaper in the United Kingdom, about how it's now being implemented in Britain. People won't be able to get there. The only place you're going to get your herb is from a licensed herbal, a registered herbal a specialist, and there aren't any.
And that's just your basic vitamin C, vitamin D, anything you may want to take.
You might get the more popular ones. Because if there's a big enough market, then the herbal manufacturer might be willing to spend the large sums of money to get it approved. And basically what they want to do is make the herbalist people go through the same hoops that the drug companies do. Mm-hmm. Then why are they doing it? They say it's for safety, but I did a little checking, and 100,000 people are estimated to be killed every year from prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. 100,000 people.
But how many people die because they overdose on vitamin D?
Exactly. I don't think anybody. Okay. So this is obviously not being done to protect people.
But you know what? There's a lot of people out there who have the idea, the perception, that self-diagnosing yourself and administering vitamins is dangerous. And I have personal experience with somebody who actually told me that it's dangerous to take too many vitamins.
Sure. I could see if maybe you were a big stockholder in a drug company, but it'd be dangerous to his financial welfare. And that gets really into the whole healthcare picture. We spend $2.5 trillion this year on healthcare in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Totally, it's 1/6 of our gross domestic product. Per capita, we spend about twice as much as they do, say, in Germany or France, and their healthcare systems are generally rated much better than ours.
And our you know, people, you have to understand and take care of yourself. You have to kind of, like, think about the way the humans lived before the last 50 years transition into the modern industrial age, where we all work in computers and sit inside under fluorescent light bulbs.
Right.
You know, we're not meant, believe in creation versus evolution. If evolution was true, we could not have evolved within the past 50 years to adapt to this new fluorescent lighting system that we've created.
That's right. We don't adapt that quickly.
No, we don't. All right. So you have to live in a way that is conducive to humanity's lifestyle.
That's
so if you live in New England or in the Northern Hemisphere, where you only get 6 hours of sunlight in a day in half the year, you know, the fall through the early springtime, you're not getting enough sunlight to produce the natural vitamin D that your body needs to fight off infection. So the answer to that is not more artificially created vaccinations to boost your immune system and actually harm you in the long run. It's to go outside and get some sunlight. It's to stop sitting inside in an office chair for 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day and working yourself to the bone. Well, the proverbial bone, because it's actually just typing now. No one actually works himself to the bone anymore. But you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. We have a society that's built around one ethos, maximizing corporate profit. Mm-hmm. Instead, we as people, we form a society for a mutual benefit. Society's practices should conform to our needs, mm-hmm. which obviously isn't to work in an office, as you're saying, or to work under the kind of stress we're having. This is not why we get together to form a society.
And to be forced to have both parents working in the workplace and then have some stranger raise your kids, you know, it's like, you know, and people just say, well, now that I have to work so much, I think we should have school year-round, so I don't have to have anyone watch my kids.
That's what we're going to. And wouldn't it be nice in a presidential campaign to have the candidates talk about these fundamental issues, like, why do people have to work so hard?
Yeah.
Why do mothers have to put their kids in daycare center when they'd rather be home with them?
Right.
You know, why do we endure all this stress? That's really one of the biggest problems.
Those aren't the questions that people ask. That's, you know, it's how can we get, you know, I don't know.
We get distracted. Why of the last 40 years, with all the tremendous advances we've made with computers, why do people make less money in real dollars than they made 40 years ago? Mm-hmm. Where the heck did the money go? That's what I want to hear candidates talk about. I want them to come up with an explanation and a solution, and they keep distracting us.
It's almost like a common sense question is a revolutionary thought now. You know,
right.
It's like,
yes.
It's almost like weird or like, yes. This, like, it's almost like coming up with E equals MC squared or something like that to think like, take it back a notch instead of making it more complicated. It's like, wow, whoa, what? Why are we working so hard? Holy crap, I never thought of that.
Before the show started, Gus and I were talking about George Orwell's 1984 and as well as Huxley's Brave New World. And it seems like a lot of their predictions has come true.
So many of them. A lot of the things that they talked about was they talked about the sexual revolution and, you know, breaking down the barriers between the male and the sexes to make them equal. And you could tell that the destruction of the family was key number one.
Yes.
to achieving the globalist, like, one world government achievement. You know, and in 1984, there was like there's a segment where Winston he's in the upper party or the middle party, so he's able to go to these like conferences where the people talk about the future of society. And there's one part where they say, you know, when we've actually been able to break the humans' mental connection to what's the sensitive word, sexual climax. You know, when you've actually been able to reduce the need for that and it doesn't happen anymore because your mental conditioning is so strong that it no longer is associated with pleasure.
Yeah.
It doesn't compute anymore. We've broken the human mind, and now the revolution will be complete because there won't be any need for family. There won't be any need for sex. There won't be any need for reproduction, for your own personal gratification. So it's all for Big Brother. It's all for the state. And in Brave New World, it's all the scientific creation so that women, they go the other way. They have sex as a way to just make people feel placated.
Exactly.
There's birthing mothers who are separated and set apart to have children. And it's through artificial insemination.
Basically, it's like a test tube baby culture.
Everybody,
and no family.
You don't
anymore.
Have any connection to anyone. Your mother's nobody. Your father's nobody. It's just, you know, you go from partner to partner, and you have no building block of society. No
so
one feels connected.
On one hand, in our society, we're given all these consumer goods to distract us mm-hmm. from how empty our lives are or how hard we're working. And that's sort of the Brave New World. And then on the other side, we have this perpetual war that Bush Jr. declared. And it really is a war against an undefined enemy all over the world that's going to go on forever, which is pretty much your Brave New World scenario, which justifies then any curtailment of civil rights.
And any one of us can be on the terror watch list for an undisclosed amount of time for an undisclosed number of reasons, and you can't get off of it. You know,
that's right.
We're our own worst enemies here.
Yes, we are. And Ken, you know that Jekyll Island is on the Amtrak line now. You know,
is that really? Yeah. Jekyll Island is off the coast of Georgia, I believe.
Savannah. It's right out. It's 11 miles from Savannah.
And this is where, about 1910.
13. You mean 1910 was the meeting?
The meeting at Jekyll Island was, for listeners who don't know, was when representatives of the major banks, in particular the Morgan Bank, the Rockefeller interests, and the Rothschild interests, with Paul Warburg, met down at a private retreat on Jekyll Island off the coast of Savannah, Georgia, and they basically set up the Federal Reserve System. And they did it. They did it as if they were a bunch of criminals meeting, because they adopted assumed names. They went down. The staff at the
did they take Amtrak?
They took the train. They took the private railroad car of Senator Nelson Aldrich, whose family was later connected to the Rockefellers. He was at the time the head, I think, of the Senate Banking Committee.
Right.
So they figured that Edward Griffin said that something like a quarter of the world's wealth was represented at this small meeting.
Yeah.
These guys really, they called the tune back then. And Paul Warburg was the brainchild. He's the guy who drafted it. And 3 years later, that got Woodrow Wilson to support it, and they pushed it through.
You know, what's really interesting, I watched this great documentary I was telling you about, The Secret of Oz.
Yes.
And it breaks down the metaphors of the Wizard of Oz, the wonderful Wizard of Oz, the original story, and how the author was very politically astute, and the whole movie or the story.
So it's not just a children's...
No, it's not a children's story. And in fact, the Cowardly Lion was representative of... He was
William Jennings Bryan,
exactly. And the Tin Man was a representative of the workers of the industrial movement, and
the Wobblies.
That would have been their time. Yeah.
And
1890s.
The Wicked Witch of the West and the East. Wicked Witch of the West was representative Rockefeller. The Wicked Witches of East was representative J.P. Morgan. And those were the two banks who were largely in control of the economy at the time. And
this was
really
all taken out of the movie. The Dorothy's slippers in the book were silver, not ruby, because silver represented the common man's solution to the money system. Gold represents the interest of the big New York City bankers, because there's not as much gold. It's easy to control society to bring about depressions or whatever the heck you want.
Yeah, a gold-based economy, a purely gold-based economy, wouldn't work, because you can create inflation or deflation at any time and actually wreck and ruin the actual small-time economy of you and I going to the grocery store and just feeding ourselves. So without the ability to have copper and silver and other lesser precious metals that are much more plentiful, we're unable to provide for ourselves.
So it concentrates power in the hands
of
a few. And Dorothy thought, by following the gold road, the
Yellow Brick Road,
that she would get to her salvation. But in fact, it was
to click the silver slippers together.
It was the silver slippers.
She had the power all the time.
So the author, he was a populist, and he was a parable about the money, the great money debate, which is a debate we should be having now, especially in light of this huge banking crisis, which has thrown this country into depression. I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'm afraid we're still at the early stages of it.
And our guest on Wednesday, Ellen Brown, is featured in the film, and she wrote the book, Web of Debt.
So
which has a lot of very common sense
solutions.
I hope
listeners can tune in for that, because this is an issue we visited with Ed Griffin, and we're going to visit it. We visited before with Ellen Brown. We're going to have her again this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. It's such an important issue. I hope people can tune in
what
and learn
time
about
again
it.
On Wednesday?
6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, and we'll be taking calls. Ellen will be taking calls too. So please join us for that, and we'll speak with her about the public banking movement, which she's gotten involved in.
And the In Context blogs is up and running?
Incontextreport.com.
And you have a blog on it, or you have a...
It's a blog.
Yeah, periodically we have some opinion pieces up there, or we repost some articles or something.
And the links...
Let people know when the show is on.
Also, your home address and phone numbers are listed.
There's also links to History Counts, where you can find the complete interviews with Ellen Brown and Ed Griffin, both of which were broadcast nationally by Pacifica, their half-an-hour programs. And they're very helpful in understanding a complicated subject, the money system.
And we also have the podcast of our appearances here on your show, Dave, and our Wednesday show, so people can get
to download those. Could be dangerous. I'm going to bring recordings of you when I go visit Jekyll Island next week.
That's great.
Please do.
I have a little plaque dedicated to you. I'm going to see if I can get it right on the island. It's a state park now.
Is that right? That's great.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Be good.
Thanks very much, Dave.
Take care.